Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 85, The Heroine's Journey. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
So it's looking at those unrelated or wounded aspects of your masculine nature, and then also cultivating positive aspects of the masculine nature. You know, archetypally, that's being able to protect yourself, provide for yourself, learn how to follow through, back yourself up, looking at all possibilities, developing a healthy bridge between your images or your dreams and manifesting them. You know, that's actually the archetypal definition of the masculine, being able to take image into action and developing a man with heart, an internal man with heart.
That was the voice of my guest, Maureen Murdoch, M.A. Maureen Murdoch is a psychotherapist, a writing teacher, and the author of 6 books, including The Heroine's Journey, Woman's Quest for Wholeness, a groundbreaking book which revealed a broader understanding of the female psyche on both a personal and cultural level. Murdoch is also author of The Heroine's Journey workbook, as well as Father's Daughters, Spinning Inward, Using Guided Imagery with Children, and she's also the editor of an anthology of memoirs written by her writing students entitled Monday Morning Memoirs, Women in the Second Half of Life. Her books have been published in 11 languages. Murdoch's research on myth and memoir culminated in her most recent book, Unreliable Truth, on Memoir and Memory. She teaches memoir writing in the UCLA Extension Writers Program as well as privately in Sausalito, California. Maureen Murdoch was chair and core faculty member of the MA Counseling Psychology Program at Pacifica Graduate Institute in Santa Barbara, and she's also adjunct faculty in depth psychology at Sonoma State University. She has been a guest lecturer at the C.G. Jung Institute, UCLA, UC Santa Cruz, UC San Diego, University of British Columbia, the Naropa Institute, the Omega Institute, the Oasis Center, University of Creation Spirituality, University of Massachusetts, and others. She has been an educational consultant for a number of school districts, and she co-created a program in human development for students in the Los Angeles City Schools to deal with conflict resolution and diversity issues after the uprisings in the early 1990s. Maureen Murdoch is also a prolific art photographer, and her work is widely exhibited. So here's the interview. Maureen Murdoch, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you, David.
Now, I know you've written a number of books, but today I'd like to focus on your book, which you wrote 17 years ago, How Time Flies.
And it's called, it certainly does.
Yeah, The Heroine's Journey. What prompted you to write that book?
Well, I had been working with Joseph Campbell's monomyth of the hero's journey for several years, and did not feel like it really addressed the psycho-spiritual journey of the feminine. So, I had worked with him in the late 70s and early 80s, and then had created groups working with groups of men and women over a 10-month period going through the stages of Campbell's heroic journey.
Yes.
And the more that we did that, the more I really felt like we needed a map, so to speak, of the heroine's journey as well to address the deep wounding of the feminine psyche.
Yes, I've worked with the Campbell material for a long time myself. And for our listeners, let me just refer them to Campbell's book, The Hero with a Thousand Faces, if they're interested in finding out more about what we're talking about in terms of the monomyth. Now, from your point of view, maybe you could briefly summarize what you see as the strengths and the weaknesses of Joseph Campbell's version of the hero's journey.
Well, it's an extraordinary map that he created. He looked at different myths throughout the cultures throughout the world and really narrowed in on the quest, the journey of the hero, looking at, and of course the hero is a term used for really the self, the soul, the journey of the soul.
Yes.
So he looked at the stages of the call, you know, how are you called?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, how do you make your journey through life? What thresholds do you cross? And what allies do you gather? And what adversaries? And what are your trials and your challenges? And what is the boon or the treasure that you seek, which is usually spiritually a sense of immortality. And then once you have some sense of that, or, you know, a sense of integration, how do you then live the rest of your life? And, of course, in A Hero with a Thousand Faces, Campbell looks at all of those stages in detail and attributes different myths to the different stages. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful model. But what was missing for the feminine journey was looking at the deep wounding of the feminine, both personally and in the culture. And so the more I worked with Campbell's monomyth, the more I felt like we needed to find something that really addressed the woman's journey.
Yes, I often encountered that, maybe not often, but I did from time to time encounter that among my female students in my classes when we would go over Campbell's model, and they would feel like, well, they just weren't sure, you know, that it seemed like it was all cast maybe in a male framework, even though he, in fact, cites many feminine myths in the course of the book. And, of course, he wrote it pre-feminism. It was written, I think, in 1945, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think it's 49, but it's definitely pre the second wave of feminism.
Right.
So, and for a man of his time, it really fit the times as well. But after the second wave of feminism, we really had to look at a different model.
Yes, and so,
and the, I'm sorry, the other thing that his the hero's journey focuses on is spiritually is the masculine journey of up and out into the god realm instead of down and in into the realm of the goddess. And that's a big difference between the masculine journey and the feminine journey.
Okay, well, let's get into your reworking of his model then. I thought you had a very nice diagram on page 18 of your book where you outline a 10-stage cycle in the heroine's journey. So perhaps you could step us through that.
Okay, well, the I want to say something about the model first. I really see the model and any model like this as just a map that some people are going to find some identification with and other people won't, just like any map. But the model is cyclical, and I'd say it's based on the experience of fathers' daughters who have allied themselves closely with their fathers or with the dominant masculine culture. And it goes through, as you said, 10 stages, but I find in working with the model that people go through this model over and over and over with different levels of awareness and different levels of consciousness. It starts with the separation from the feminine, which often occurs on a personal level. If a daughter sees her mother as emotionally controlling or angry or manipulative or illogical or vulnerable or self-loathing or self-denigrating and powerless, as some mothers of previous generations were, who had no choice about career or child-rearing, and who often felt lonely and abandoned by their husbands. And if the feminine is seen as negative, which it has been, and certainly in our culture, the daughter separates from those qualities she associates with the feminine. And she may even separate from positive feminine qualities, such as nurturing or emotional expressiveness and creativity and compassion for herself and others, to get ahead in this culture, and doesn't know how to give herself sustenance. And on a cultural level, the separation from the feminine comes from the images of the feminine that are presented by the media and are impossible to identify with. So there's a cultural distortion of the female body, there's contempt for the female body and matter, and certainly of nature. So because ours is a very optimistic, forward-looking society, we're taught basically to cast out the destructive aspects of the feminine. So oftentimes the young girl, and the young boy too, begins to separate from their body, from feelings, particularly negative feelings that may have been expressed by the mother. And there's a split, very early split between mind and body. And it's often seen as the beginning of the split between relationship and achievement. These are seen as incompatible. So that's the first stage, the separation from the feminine. And for a lot of people on, looking at it on a spiritual level, there's been a separation from the divine feminine, since we move from a mythology of the eternal return to a mythology of the quest.
Okay, that's a very clear presentation, that somehow the young girl and sometimes the young boy cuts off an essential part of their inner essence because of negative experiences with the mother, or the way that the mother is portrayed culturally, and that femininity is portrayed culturally. And so then moving on to your second stage, where you talk about identification with the masculine.
Right. And again, I'm looking, this is through the lens of fathers, daughters who identify primarily with the masculine. So, with this second stage, there's an identification with the masculine, but it's not one's own inner masculinity. It's an outer patriarchal masculine whose driving force is power. So an individual in a patriarchal culture is driven to seek control over themselves and others in an inhuman desire for perfection. So if we're looking at the young girl, she may see men in the male world as adult, becomes identified with her inner masculine voice, whether that voice is the voice of her father, God the Father, or the patriarchal culture. And masculine consciousness often tries to help the feminine to speak. In other words, it jumps in and takes over, does not always wait for body wisdom, you know, for her body mm-hmm. to know its truth. Mm-hmm. So in terms of a young girl, she may see her personal father as heroic, particularly if the relationship with the mother is negative. And this is, you know, I was writing this book in the 80s. You know, I think a lot has changed since then, but at that time, the father still had the position of more freedom. He still had the position of the privilege to come and go as he pleased, and he still had power and status. And, you know, as you know, some of that has changed. But the young girl still looks to her father for recognition and for affirmation of her value as a woman. So if the father was absent or negligent, the young girl may become what Linda Leonard have called the armored Amazon, often identifying on an ego level with the masculine or the fathering function herself. Since her father didn't give her the support she needed, then she finds she has to do it herself. In adolescence, what happens for some girls is that the relationship with the father may become over-intellectualized. When I was writing the book, Fathers, Daughters, Breaking the Ties That Bind, I interviewed 40 women who self-identified as father's daughters, and many talked about this over-intellectualized relationship with their own fathers in their adolescence. One woman called it the erotic brain, that she lived out the image he projected onto her. What happens, though, if the relationship with the father is over-intellectualized, the young girl splits off even more from her body and her sexuality. So this identification with the masculine, I mean, we can see that in our culture very, very strongly, the way women have entered masculine-oriented professions in droves.
Yeah, so when you talk about father's daughters, I notice that's a phrase you use a lot. And what you mean by that then is women who are very highly identified with their father?
With their father or with the masculine culture. I mean, even if we don't have a personal relationship with the father, ours is a very father-oriented culture. So most women in our culture have this orientation to identify with the masculine and with masculine values to get ahead, to achieve, often at the cost of knowing what their own intuition is saying or what their own creative dreams are.
Right.
There's a, you know, there's a real desire to get ahead.
Yes.
And that's how our culture rewards people.
Yes. The next stage in your model borrows a phrase from Campbell, the road of trials.
Right.
Meeting ogres and dragons. What are the ogres and dragons that that women uniquely confront?
Well, in terms of the road of trials, I mean, in terms of the outer world, the focus is on the task for ego development, just as the same in Campbell's model, to really do the things that everyone needs to do to become an adult. But in the female model or the feminine model, some of the, as you said, dragons are to overcome the myth of dependency, the myth of inferiority, and the myth of romantic love. Just briefly, the myth of dependency, many females have been encouraged to be dependent, to give up their needs for another's love, that the other comes first. They're taught to protect others from their success and autonomy. In terms of female inferiority, the female, there's a term called deficit thinking, where the female is seen as not as good enough as the male, and the male is better and more powerful. And since we live in an androcentric society, which sees the world from a masculine perspective, the mother tongue, or the language of experience, is not seen as valid as the father tongue, the language of analysis. And many cultures still discourage women from the full exercise of their capacities or the full development of their potential. The other myth that women really have to look at is the myth of romantic love, that he, whether actually it's a he or another partner, will change my life, whether he's a boss, a husband, a lover, a son, an ideology, a teacher, a political movement, a spiritual sect. The myth is always that the other will actualize one's destiny. And I think women have lived too long with the idea of closure, meaning that if he notices me, if I marry him, if I get into college, if I get this job, if I get this degree, then there's the possibility of something being over or settled, or I'll be content.
Right.
This is kind of the delusion of the path of life. So those are some of the specific dragons that that women have to look for.
Okay, and then they move on to finding the illusory boon of success, which I
you've
hinted at.
Yes, yeah. Well, the you know, the boon of success in the outer world is certainly the degree, the job, the status. So the focus here is on performance, pushing limits, doing. Focus is on product instead of process. And there's a struggle to achieve, whether it's the achievement of love, money, prestige, or position. That struggle to achieve often becomes an addiction. And what happens, and this is oftentimes when I see people come into therapy, they feel like, okay, I did everything I was told to do or that the culture told me to do. And I've climbed the mountain, and I've got to find the next outer goal. So the myth here is of never being enough. You know, that we always have to have something else to strive for. And I think for women, even more so than men, there's a difficulty in feeling completely satisfied. There's a sense that, oh, I still have to do more. I have to achieve more. So the next stage is the awakening to feelings of spiritual aridity. And that's when a woman starts to feel, and a man, I mean, I have so many men come to me and say, you know, this journey is not just for women. It certainly speaks to my own psychological journey, too, you know, where the person feels that they've achieved their goals, and but they begin to feel out of sync with themselves. So they might begin to act out with food or with alcohol or spending or sex or overwork. And there's a real feeling of spiritual aridity. That, you know, what happened to me? Mm-hmm. My river of creativity has dried up. Mm-hmm. So this is a stage that people find painful, but I always find in working with people that it's exciting because they're beginning to look more deeply at themselves.
Yes, the change and growth can't happen until there's some pain there to drive, to motivate them.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so instead of looking up and out, they're starting to look down and in.
Yes.
And that's when we move to the next stage, which is the initiation and descent to the goddess.
And I believe that there's a nice portion in that stage. Maybe you want to talk about the stage a little bit, and also you could read to us a little bit from what you've written about that
stage. Sure, sure. Well, what I see in this stage is that when I'm talking about a descent, I'm talking about really moving into a different state of being, that there's a real feeling of sadness, of wandering, of grief, of feeling unfocused, of feeling undirected, that there's no sense of time, that time is endless. During this descent, the task is to reclaim the discarded, repressed parts of oneself that were split off in the original separation from the feminine. And these are the parts of the self that were perhaps ignored or devalued, your feelings, your connection with your body, your connection with your sexuality, with your creativity, your intuition. And you know, in our culture, it's called depression, but I really see the descent as a sacred journey to reclaim the parts of oneself that have been split off, not only the personal self, but the parts of the culture that have been split off, too. And I see the descent, you know, going back to, to Campbell's monomyth, he talks about a call, the call of the soul. And I see the descent very much as a call of the soul, and it requires a woman or a man to respond consciously, to accept the invitation of the soul to create herself anew, and undertake the challenges that the descent provides, no matter how frightened or inadequate she may feel. The dissent is often associated with particular myths, such as the Demeter-Persephone myth, when Persephone is abducted into the underworld, or the Inanna Ereshkigal Sumerian myth, where Inanna makes a conscious descent into the underworld. And if you'd like me to read a part of the book that talks about the descent, this is in the chapter on the initiation and descent of the goddess. I write, "A woman moves down into the depths to reclaim the parts of herself that split off when she rejected the mother and shattered the mirror of the feminine. To make this journey, a woman puts aside her fascination with the intellect and games of the cultural mind and acquaints herself, perhaps for the first time, with her body, her emotions, her sexuality, her intuition, her images, her values, and her mind. This is what she will find in the depths. When a woman makes her descent, she may feel stripped bare, dismembered, or even devoured by rage. She experiences a loss of identity, a falling away of the perimeters of a known role, and the fear that accompanies loss. She may feel dried up, raw, and devoid of sexuality, or experience the gut-wrenching pain of being turned inside out. And she may spend a long time there in the dark, waiting while life goes on up above. The descent is a compulsion. We all try to avoid it, but at some point in our lives, we do journey to our depths. It is not a glamorous journey, but it invariably strengthens a woman or a man and clarifies her sense of self."
Very nice. Very nice. Yeah, I can certainly identify with that. And this often is associated with, at least for men, the so-called midlife crisis.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, it's interesting that you just said that, because when I had finished working on this map or creating this map, I brought it back to show Joseph Campbell, I think it was in 1982 or 1983, and he said to me at the time, you know, women don't need to make the journey. They're the place that everyone is trying to get to. And I said, no, that, you know, may be true mythologically, that the feminine is the place that everyone is trying to get to in terms of a sense of spirituality and a sense of psychological depth. But women need to go through the journey as much as men do. And when I talked to him more about the descent, he said, well, yes, that's like men at midlife who've put their ladder up against, you know, the wrong wall or the wrong tree and find out that they've gotten to a place that really doesn't serve their soul anymore.
Yes, yes. So then what happens to...
what happens after the descent?
How do you get back up?
How do you get out, right? Well, I mean, you have to do a lot of work there.
Yes.
But the next stage...
What sort of work would you do there? Let's pause just a moment there. What is the work that's to be done?
Well, the work is... I'll give you an example. When I was talking about this, I was giving a lecture down at Cal State. I think it was Cal State Fullerton. And a woman, when I was describing the descent, a woman in the back raised her hand and she said, you know, I'm in a descent right now. And, you know, now that you've named this, I've been here for probably the last 9 months. And she said, I ran my own company. It was a very, very successful company. And one day I just couldn't do it anymore. It just did not fit who I had become. So I took a leave. I went home and I went into my room, and my family was not happy about it. My husband wasn't happy about it. My children weren't happy about it, but I had to reconnect to myself. And so she said she spent a lot of time gardening. She spent a lot of time working with clay. There was this necessity to feel matter. to reconnect with Mother Earth. Yes, yes. And, you know, I know a lot of people can't do that. They just can't take off from their jobs and spend 9 months working in the garden. But some people do rearrange their schedules so that they have more time with their dreams, that they have more time with their own creativity. They re-examine their values. I mean, that's basically what happens. And that's part of this next stage, this urgent yearning to reconnect with the feminine, where the first part of the journey is really being led with the mind, and the second part of the journey is really being led by the heart or the soul. The focus is on feelings and body and soul. So at that point, a woman is saying, okay, you know, what does it mean to be a woman in this world? How do I nurture myself? So there may be a yearning to be in nature, as I just mentioned, a yearning to listen to one's own rhythms, the cycles of one's body, to begin to understand one's sexuality, to attune to the cycles of nature and the moon, a real desire to listen to one's intuition, which is the wise woman within, the greatest gift we have. So at this stage, you know, a lot of women, as I mentioned before, come into therapy and say, okay, you know, I was a certain person till probably around 9. I had certain dreams. And then, you know, I got into adolescence. I got into focusing on achievement, and I lost part of myself. Mm-hmm. And how do I reclaim it? So to answer your specific question, a lot of work with dreams.
Okay, yeah. And, boy, that's a topic we could go off on because I'm very interested in dreams. But moving along, we come to the next stage, which is healing the mother-daughter split, which is actually where the problem began, was separation from the feminine. But now we've come back to that issue.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So it's healing that part of yourself that you split off from in the initial separation from the feminine. So those could be, you know, really looking at the at your ability to express your feelings, or your ability to listen to your body, or your ability to listen to your intuition. When I talk about healing the mother-daughter split, for a lot of women and men, there's a necessity to grieve that initial separation from one's own mother and from one's feminine nature, from one's lost dreams, and move on. If the mother is still alive, there may be work to do in terms of healing that relationship. And if she's not, there's still work that can be done in accepting who the personal mother was at her time in history. But I think also for a lot of people, there's a identification with and reclaiming of feminine values, which, you know, if I think about the archetypal feminine, I'm talking about emotional connection, empathy, compassion, fierce compassion, a sense of discernment, a sense of containment. And I think that there's also a need to learn about being instead of doing, which is just as difficult a discipline. I think there's one of the reasons there's enormous interest right now in the divine feminine and people reclaiming her and making pilgrimage to Black Madonna sites and Mary Magdalene sites is that deep, deep yearning for the feminine, deep yearning for a connection with the sacred feminine.
Okay, and then you move along to healing the wounded masculine. What's that
right.
about?
This is a really important stage, I think, particularly being a father's daughter. It's identifying the unrelated or wounded aspects of our masculine nature within ourselves. And for women, taking back the projection of these on the men in our lives. So, you know, really looking within yourself at what are your unrelated or wounded aspects of your masculine nature? You know, what are the parts of yourself that have been repressive of your body and feelings, that denies your limits and tells you to tough it out, but there's no gain without pain. The macho part, the adversarial part. I'll give you an example. I grew up with a dad who worked in advertising in New York, and he had a very, very strong driver, inner driver, that never let him stop. I mean, he worked 16, 18 hours a day. And I very much took that on. So, you know, identifying that driver within myself and saying, okay, I have to set limits on that, because mm-hmm. I can work for long periods of time without ever paying any attention to my body. You know, there's some positive things about that. I'm a person who gets a lot of writing done, but there's whole other parts of myself that are undeveloped. So it's looking at those unrelated or wounded aspects of your masculine nature, and then also cultivating positive aspects of the masculine nature. You know, archetypally, that's being able to protect yourself, provide for yourself, learn how to follow through, back yourself up, looking at all possibilities, developing a healthy bridge between your images or your dreams and manifesting them. You know, that's actually the archetypal definition of the masculine, being able to take image into action, and developing a man with heart, an internal man with heart.
I like that phrase, and say a little bit more about what that means to you, the internal man with heart.
Well, you know, developing real compassion for yourself. I guess that's the best way I could say it. A very protective, nurturing, compassionate part of yourself that also will back you up, you know, that will... I talk about, in the book, I talk about growing an internal supportive father. You know, a lot of people are always saying, well, you know, my father didn't do this or my father didn't do that. Well, okay, that's fine, or you didn't have a partner who did all of that, but you can grow those aspects of yourself. Mm-hmm. You can grow a part that loves you for you instead of just loving you for your achievements.
So you're really talking about a sort of benevolent, loving aspect of masculinity, of the masculine archetype.
Absolutely.
Kind of absolutely. The good father.
The good father.
Yeah.
The good enough father.
Yeah.
Within yourself.
Yeah. And then we come to the final stage before it all recycles all over again.
Right. Which is, yeah, the sacred marriage, the... Basically, the integration of masculine and feminine. The marriage of masculine and feminine is a symbol of the self, where the, you know, we don't throw out what we've learned on the journey. We really try to find balance between the masculine and feminine. And here, a woman remembers her true nature and accepts herself as she is, knowing that in developing a new feminine consciousness, you have to have an equally strong masculine consciousness, or else you can't get your voice out into the world. So it's integrating all aspects of one's nature, which I think is a lifelong task.
Yes, yes.
You know, people talk about trying to find balance in their lives all the time, so it's, you know, making that conscious, how do I find balance in my life.
Right. And you talk about yourself being a father's daughter, and I get the sense that this model, this whole journey that you've taken us through, is a journey that that you've been going through for yourself, or have gone
mm-hmm.
through.
Over and over and over again.
Yeah.
It's and I think most people do, you know, both men and women, but I think particularly women of my generation, women who were part of the second wave of feminism in the 70s and 80s, a lot of us were really fathers, daughters who were successful in the outer world, but at great cost to our emotional, spiritual, and physical self. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a matter of really, as I said before, finding that balance and how, whatever way you do it, whether it's through your spirituality or your creativity or through your body.
Well, I noticed that you're also a fine photographer. And what role has photography played for you in that process?
Oh, thank you. Well, it gets me out in nature because I'm primarily photographed out in nature. It helps me, I'd say I'm primarily a visual thinker, so I love seeing the light and the shadow in certain images. And then I don't have a dark room right now, but I used to work in the dark room, and I quite frankly loved being in the dark and seeing the image materialize out of the developer. So for me, photography is quite a mystical experience.
Yes, it sounds like maybe it's played kind of a role in that integration that you're talking about.
Yes, it has. My father was an artist, and before he created his ad agency, and his masculine way of looking at art really did not allow for this more, I guess my way of doing photography is more feminine. And the photography has really healed my own creative wound. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not doing it for achievement. I'm really doing it because I enjoy the process.
Yes. What's been the reception to your book? It's been out now for a number of years. And what's the reception been?
It's been, I mean, when it first came out, it was quite overwhelming. I got letters from women all over the world and men. The book now is in, I think, nine or 11 languages.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and so it has had a very long shelf life. Because of the response to the book, then I wrote Father's Daughters to really look at the need to heal that relationship, not just the relationship with the personal father, but with the cultural masculine. So it's a work that has a life of its own and, you know, continues mm-hmm. to, I think, be a guide for some people on their journey.
Okay. Well, it has been 17 years since you wrote the book. Has your thinking about the issues covered there changed at all? How would the book be different if you were writing it today, if at all?
Well, you know, I'd really like to be interviewing women in their 30s, 20s and 30s who are out in the masculine-oriented achievement world and see how they're finding balance in their lives. I think that, you know, I wonder at this point if there is as much separation from the feminine as I saw when I was writing the book. Mm-hmm. So that would be something that I would really want to look at. I recently did a workshop down at UCLA, and there were women in it from their 20s to their 60s. And, you know, the women in their 20s said that they did identify with certain aspects of the model, but I don't think that they went through the same deep wounding of the feminine as maybe women in their 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, there might be some listeners who'd want to follow in your footsteps. Give us a quick overview of your educational background. How did you get to become this interesting person who gets to write books about psychology?
That's funny. I have a master's in human development from Pacific Oaks in Pasadena, and I got my MFT, my marriage and family therapy license in the 80s. I've taught at Pacifica Graduate Institute, where the focus there is in-depth psychology, which I would say that this work comes out of. And I guess that's it.
Okay. And other than your own book, is there another book or two that you'd recommend to the interested listener who wants to go further into this area?
Sure. I think the books by Jean Shinoda Bolen,
yes.
certainly would be something to look at. Her recent book, Messages from the Mother, I think is a very, very important look at the cultural need to recognize the feminine. And then Marion Woodman's books, one of her early books, The Pregnant Virgin, is also another look at the feminine journey, which I think your listeners would enjoy.
Excellent recommendations, both. Well, as we wrap things up here, are there any last thoughts you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, just to, I guess my focus in the last several years has been the divine feminine, and I've been going on different pilgrimages to different Black Madonna sites. I think that the awareness right now of how we have to caretake the earth and climate change and, you know, all is connected to this recognition that we can't separate from our feminine nature, whether it's on a personal, cultural, or global nature. So pay attention to the feminine.
Maureen Murdoch, thanks so much for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Well, you're welcome, David. It was delightful to speak with you.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Maureen Murdoch and also that you learned something. I know that I did. Reading her book, I think, really helped to fill in some of the blank spaces in terms of my own knowledge about the issues that she writes about. I was really impressed by her ability to speak so fluently about matters of depth and matters of the soul, about mythology and the journey of the heroine. I only wish I was as articulate. I was glad to see that she didn't, or that she doesn't, entirely dismiss the work of Joseph Campbell. And in fact, she acknowledges her debt to him. I know that I continue to be very impressed by Joseph Campbell's book, what I think of as his premier book, Hero with a Thousand Faces. To me, his work seems very universal and has stood the test of time, having been written now over 50 years ago. And I always required that book when I was that was one of five books that I was acquiring when I was in recent years teaching Myth, Dream, and Symbol. And if I were still teaching that class, I'd want to use Maureen's book. I would want to find a way to integrate it in, because I think it's something that women in the class would really appreciate. While I felt Campbell was writing for both men and women, and really intended his use of the word hero to apply to the heroine as well as the male hero, I would from time to time, and particularly in more recent years, hear from female students who would question whether the book really applied to them and the extent to which it applied to them. Often he would use the word he or him and not have, not sort of counterbalance that with she and her. At the same time, though, he did, as I recall, talk about the myth of Persephone and quite a few other myths that involved the, you know, female heroes. But feminist scholarship has revealed a lot of information about a matriarchal age that preceded this patriarchal one in which we've lived for some time. And many women are looking back to that and finding their sense of meaning and empowerment by touching base with these earlier earth-based mythologies. And I'm sure that Maureen's book continues to speak to many women. At the same time, I think her book, written now 17 years ago, there were places where it struck me as maybe just a little bit dated, and she's quite forthright about it being rooted in the women's issues of her generation. But women are increasingly more empowered and liberated than they were in her mother's era, and she's quite clear that her book was very much trying to break out of the prescribed mold that women of her mother's generation were confined to. So despite those parts that, to me, seemed like they might be a bit anchored in that time, there's much universal wisdom in her writing that both men and women will continue to benefit from. So as I say, Maureen's book has helped to fill in some of the missing chinks in my own understanding of the journey from a female perspective, And I'm looking forward to extending this learning for myself and hopefully for you by inviting more guests, more women guests who've written about mythology in relation to women's issues. So I hope you'll keep listening and looking forward to those.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave. And Shrink Wrap Radio is playing on again. Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head.
I want to share some good news with you. The big podcast event here in the U.S. is called the Podcast and New Media Expo, which takes place in Southern California in September. I believe this year will be the third time it's been put on, and podcasters from all over the country and probably all over the world come for 3 days of lectures, workshops, and demonstrations of hardware and software. It's a lot of fun and a chance to see the faces behind the voices. They received something like 700 applications this year from folks who want to be presenters, and I'm happy to report that my proposal was one of about 60 or so that got selected. You won't be too surprised to learn that I'll be giving a presentation on the interview format as an ideal one for educators who are interested in getting into podcasting. There's a chance I might use some quotes from you out there, particularly if you're a student. So I'd be interested in any quotes about how Shrink Wrap Radio may have been a useful supplement to your education. So just drop me a line or two via email, and maybe I can squeeze those into the presentation and beef it up a bit with some real world input. And speaking of interviews, don't forget about my other podcast interview series, which you'll find at wisecounsel.mentalhelp.net. No www, just http://wisecounsel.mentalhelp.net. And currently the latest interview there is still the one with Dr. Steve Hayes, who's developed an approach to psychotherapy called Acceptance Commitment Therapy, or ACT. And he was very inspiring, a very inspiring and dynamic guest. And if you haven't had a chance to listen, you might want to check that one out. In my ongoing effort to promote Shrink Wrap Radio, I've continued to post my analysis of the Zodiac serial killer on YouTube, and I've got 8 episodes up at this point, and on each one I mention Shrink Wrap Radio. I don't know whether it's brought any new listeners to this show or not, though, so please, if you have discovered Shrink Wrap Radio as a result of my YouTube exposure, drop me an email and let me know. You'll notice there's a Frapper icon in the green bar on the left of the Shrink Wrap Radio pages. If you haven't put yourself on our Frapper map yet, that's where you do it. And right now we have one new addition to our Frapper map. So I want to give a big thank you and a welcome to Brad in Brigham City, Utah, who says he appreciates my occasional mentions of Jung. Occasional, I thought I mentioned him a lot. You need to listen to more back shows, Brad, and catch up here. As usual, I want to thank our sponsors, Pod Show and GoDaddy. One of the places you'll find this show is at shrinkwrapradio.podshow.com, and you can subscribe to it there. You'll find great GoDaddy discounts for all your domain name and web hosting needs on our website at shrinkwrapradio.com.
This is Josh C. from San Jose. You're on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Thanks for that transition, Josh. I could really use some more of these transitions. I had some computer problems that caused me to lose some of the ones I've used in the past. So please send me more of those voice clips. I'll turn you into an internet star. Now let's see what we've got in our mailbag this week. Audrey writes, "Dear Dr. Dave, just found your podcast and love it. Thanks. Someone wrote your show and asked you to do a podcast on sleep learning. Dr. Eric Maisel's book, Sleep Thinking, is in that category, but more self-directed. I think he'd make a great guest for your show. His new book is 10 Zen Seconds. You can contact him through his website, 10 Zen Seconds. Thanks so much for podcasting and sharing. Audrey." Well, I went to his website, Audrey, and he looks like an interesting guy. And he's in my neck of the woods, too. He's in the San Francisco Bay Area. He's written a number of books. He's clearly into Zen and into creativity. He might make an interesting guest, so I will put him on my to-do list. And somewhere down the road, you keep listening, and chances are you will hear him here. And speaking of guests, I got a nice note from our guest from a number of sessions back, Brother Bernard, who writes, "Hi, Dr. Dave. This is just a note to keep in touch and to let you know that folks continue to enjoy our interview. Just today, I received a note from a U.S. military chaplain in Italy for whom the show meant a great deal. I sent copies of our interview to several monasteries of cloistered nuns who I'm associated with, so your good work has gone out to places not too many folks get entree into. Easter and Passover peace, your brother Bernard," or Bernard. Brother Bernard, it's always great to hear from you, and I definitely want us to stay in touch with one another, and I'm so glad your interview is being enjoyed in faraway places. And I hope that some of those cloistered folks are inspired to tune into Shrink Wrap Radio if their cloistered life allows them to do that. I don't know if it would or not. Next, we hear from Kevin, who writes, "Hi, Dr. Dave. I'm a 28-year-old listener from Joliet, Illinois, and just wanted to say I love the show. I find it fascinating, the different subjects that you discuss, because they all revolve around the different ways people tick. I also wanted to know whether or not there are any books on the culture of blue-collar workers. I'm a material handler here in the Midwest and find that there are always particular types of people I run into doing my job. I don't like to pigeonhole people, but the idea of archetypes is one idea that I think really does apply to blue-collar workers. The different people I meet seem to fill different archetypes in the circle of niches that we do to meet a common goal day in and day out. Do you know a book or website that discusses the culture of blue-collar workers and maybe the psychological impact that physical work and company expectations has on the blue-collar worker? Oh, by the way, I put my name on the Frapper map. Great program. Keep up the good and interesting work. Kevin." Kevin, thanks so much for putting yourself on the Frapper map and for writing. And that's a really interesting question that you raise. I went on the internet and I did a Google search on blue-collar psychology, and it turned up some interesting sites, too many and too diverse to list here, but I would recommend that you try something along those lines. I don't know that I found anything that fits exactly what you're looking for. So if any listeners know of some good resources, drop me a line and I'll pass them along to Kevin. Next, we get a note from Tom, who I believe is in the UK. And Tom writes, "Hi, Dr. Dave. I love Shrink Wrap Radio. Thanks so much for producing a podcast which encompasses most of my most urgent areas of intellectual curiosity. I'm doing a lot of data entry work at the moment and learning about Tibetan Buddhism, depth psychology, and your experiences with the Tarot is helping the time to pass much more swiftly." I can imagine doing data entry, that would be really important. He goes on, "Anyhow, I don't know whether you've ever read a book entitled The Occult by an author named Colin Wilson, or maybe it's Colin Wilson. But if you haven't, I get the feeling that you'd absolutely love it. It's a psychological examination of occult phenomena, which Wilson suggests are a precursor to individual consciousness expansion. It takes in a chronological examination of key occult figures, as well as some psychologists like Gurdjieff, as well as taking an objective stance to examine such phenomena. Considered in the light of the revelations that practices like Kundalini Yoga are supposed to bring, it makes for a compelling reading. It's scholarly and balanced, too, which is a relief, as the title doesn't necessarily suggest objectivity. It's a book which literally changed my life and started me reading far more deeply into matters esoteric and psychological. Anyhow, just thought I'd drop you a line of support, Dave. Keep up the good work, Tom. Tom, thanks so much for that book recommendation. I've certainly heard Colin Wilson's name. He's written a lot of books, I think, and is a well-known and, I think, pretty respected author. I'm not sure that I've ever – I think I've looked at some of his books, but I'm not sure I've ever actually read a whole one. And so maybe some listeners out there will be inspired to read this book that you mentioned. Frankly, I've got so many books on my to-do list in connection with the show, like potential people to interview, so that I'm constantly receiving books and getting books and kind of having to skim them. So I don't know if I'll be getting around to that one or not, although Colin Wilson would probably make a great guest. I should go after him, try to figure out how to contact him. I'd love to hear from you. Remember, you can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com, and you can leave voicemails on Skype, where our name is ShrinkPod, and you can also leave voice messages on my Chingo. Look for the logo over on the left on the Shrink Wrap Radio website, the My Chingo logo. And in the U.S., you can leave voicemail on our phone at 206-337-0622. And so please send those voicemails. I really like those and would love to have more to play on here. So thanks again to Maureen Murdoch. So thanks again to Maureen Murdoch for the interview on the heroine's journey. Our next show will feature UK-based author and hypnotherapist Terence Watts discussing his self-help book, Warriors, Settlers, and Nomads. Until then, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind. Thank you.